2 weeks ago, you were going to tell us all about hair and 3D printing, and then the Public Enterprises Minister intervened because he didn't want us to talk about hair loss. And now hair loss may have a solution, a technological solution. Gone are the creams, the hairs, and the snake oil salesmen selling those kinds of solutions.
Hopefully, and it is a real big concern, despite sometimes it being seen as sort of a vanity-only thing. You know, people become very attached to their hair, and one of the ways...
Well,
you know,
that's not the problem. It's when your hair becomes detached from you.
and possibly our language as we talk through this is going to be littered with unintended references, because one of the ways it's possible to tell how important a subject is in a society or a culture is how frequently it's used in its idiom and things like that. And so we certainly have lots of references about losing your hair and having hair and
pulling your hair out, Colin.
Exactly. Which suggests then that, wow, this is very important for us. And I couldn't find wide-ranging statistics, but the Americans tend to have lots of stuff on this, and they even have a hair loss association, which says that in their most recent sort of surveys, et cetera, that 2/3 of men in America will have an appreciable hair loss by the age of 35. And so that is a very large group of people who typically, one, would not want to see that happen, and two, from the age of 35, you imagine they've got some coins to spend, are willing to dedicate a fair chunk of that to wanting to get the hair back. So this is a very well-funded and well-researched part of the scientific community, although no prize yet for somebody saying, we've cracked it.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder at that hair loss convention whether or not the hotel rooms have got hair dryers in the drawers and stuff. Let's provoke the baldy revolutionary movement, the BRM. But yeah, for those of us who have less hair today than we did when we were younger, it's quite frustrating. I've got Thomas who's sitting across from me. Thomas is here getting some work experience. Thomas has got so much hair, and he's got this like mop of hair, which makes me very jealous. I have hair envy this evening, and he doesn't appreciate the seriousness of this conversation. So how then, if we can't do it medically, are we going to be doing it using the great advances that we're seeing in 3D printing technology?
So it is a combination of things, and for all of those who feel like, well, I've got hair, I've got nothing to worry about, one of the larger driving forces for it is diet, stress, and the environment. And for young people with big heads of hair, they're kind of in the sweet spot there for being affected by it quite negatively. For everybody else, we lose hair principally because we get older. The two parts, the ones that actually grow the follicle and the bit that adds the color, the pigment to the follicle, just die off over time. That's why our hair goes gray. That's why our hair falls out. In fact, our hair is always falling out. The difference, though, is they typically have three phases. So there's a growing phase, a dormant phase, which just sort of hangs around, and then it actually falls out. And typically, because those aren't happening at the same time for all over your head, you don't really notice it. And the other big plus, I suppose, is you have enough hair that you don't notice it. Again, trying to find specific numbers, and even worse, trying to think who's got saddled with a horrible job of counting how many hairs there are on people's heads doesn't seem like a fun occupation. But I understand there is somewhere in the region of about 100,000 hairs for people with dark hair. Those with blonde hair or light-colored hairs, you tend to get a few more. And if you've got red hair, unfortunately, you've probably got slightly fewer. And until now, the principal method for trying to prevent loss is just slowing its loss. So the sort of medications you can take and the lotions and things you apply typically just look to try and reduce the factors that could see those cells die off as early as they are. The second one, or actual transplants, they've thankfully gotten a lot more effective and successful.
But you would see these pictures of these transplants, and people would essentially have hair plugs drilled into their skin. Helps. I mean, it was not for vegetarians.
No, this is pretty serious, invasive stuff. One, it has to be taken from somewhere else in your scalp, so you're having holes drilled and removed from the typically the back or the sides. The classic male pattern baldness references come from the fact that you lose it in the front and the top. So you remove it from the sides, or you tend to have a lot more, and then you sort of sparsely or strategically place it all over the top and the front to hopefully fill it in a little bit. Then there's one very high-profile individual who has lots of speculation about his hair and whether it's real or whatever else. And
who's that?
This would be the U.S. president, which most people suspect that a good many years ago he would have had a transplant, which has given him a sort of interesting but nevertheless real head of hair that he seems to have.
Yeah, I mean, let's not be unkind towards towards members of the Bald Society, but I mean, there have been gusts of wind which have when the comb over is blown forward, that there is not very much underneath it. And I mean, hair, frankly, is more about vanity than anything else today. I mean, unless you you work in a field and can't afford a hat. The hair doesn't serve any functional purpose other than make you feel good about yourself, does it?
Well, from what I'm no expert here, but from what I've been reading up on it, it actually has quite significant and deep-centered effects on us as humans. We really don't feel confident. We don't feel like we can do what we want to do or even want to be seen when we don't feel comfortable with what our hair looks like or how much hair we have. So I wouldn't simply dismiss it as saying it doesn't affect you or it's a pure vanity. It appears to be a bit more than that. And so I suppose, you know, money and it having a major impact, a lot of people willing to pay for it, has got us here. But there's another element that has allowed it to happen, because there's a lot of scientific development and research in understanding how cells communicate. A major understanding there was we simply weren't putting cells close enough together to try and get this to work. And the other element is what's been advanced in 3D printing. And just to give you the third category of how hair replacement kind of works, and this is the broad category of wigs, there the advancements have come from creating much better fitting and more realistic looking artificial sculpts. Those are often 3D printed themselves, which contain real hair, not living hair, but real hair that when added with the more improved adhesives, which could stick around and don't cause any irritation, effectively give you what looks like a real head of hair. And this one comes with the lowest risk. All of them, though, are still very expensive. And so this new technique, which effectively allows you to grow your real hair cells, so the kind of things that you would simply remove from your head and transplant, you can now artificially grow in a lab, for want of a better word. And the way it's grown is you take undifferentiated stem cells and with the right conditions and using especially 3D printed scaffolding to cluster those cells together. And just forget, you know, your hair is not wide, right? And so the cells around the hair are a lot smaller than that. And this is then how they go about doing it. But there are some remarkable other things that have allowed this to happen, complements of the work that we're doing. And one that you're probably holding in your hand is your phone. Microchips have done an amazing amount of stuff for the way circuits are printed or sort of removed, creating distances between some of the components. The transistors on a microchip, which they typically call a 7-nanometer microchip, means that there is 7 nanometers in the gap between the transistors. 7 nanometers, a nanometer is 1,000 millionth of a meter. There's 60,000 nanometers is principally the width of a human hair. So this is the first thing that they've managed to do in that regard. And then there's machines that they've created that way. And again, in your phone, when you move your phone backwards and forwards or orientate it, there's a little sensor in there that's basically created as a little nano machine that can tell you which direction it's facing. And when you are involved in an accident and your airbag deploys, there's typically a tiny little machine created at that small scale that is able to trigger and register that you've just had an accident. And then there's a South African connection here as well, because back in 2014, Jonty Hurwitz undertook to create the world's largest sculpture, certainly of a person. He's made a couple of them. And this thing is so small, it can stand on a human hair. In fact, there's a picture I shared in the tweet before the show began. And it's a needle on its side. And in the eye of the needle is this little ballerina model. And it looks like the little ballerina is standing on a stage, because the eye of the needle is such a big area for the size of what that is. So the ability to print incredibly small or craft incredibly small things is what's allowed us to start creating these scaffoldings. And it's not just for hair. Recently, they've started working on heart patches. And this is when you have heart surgery. Typically, a muscle needs some time when it's not moving in order for it to recover. But that's not possible with a heart for, you know, kind of obvious reasons. But this newly printed sort of heart patch consisting of heart cells taken from that patient kind of works as a crutch, allowing that section of the heart to actually rest while the other part that's been added on to continue functioning and let the whole heart sort of recover. And when we're able to start doing that, we can remanufacture other parts of the human body or other things in the real world, then we really start seeing some pretty big advances and some pretty amazing stuff that can happen, not just for giving our hair back. And for Star Trek fans, for example, from the 80s, they introduced a little device they called the replicator. And effectively what this thing was something that understood what something was made out of, the recipe for stuff, and the ability to recreate or manufacture it. And this sort of technology is getting us one step closer to that. And I've got to say, if that doesn't blow your hair back, it must be because you simply don't have any.
But isn't it astonishing, Colin? Scientists go off on a tangent to solve one particular problem. And actually, the science and the research ends up solving a plethora of others. And that's, I suppose, the wonder of things like space travel and everything else that you've told us about in recent times that has led to the advancement of humanity as a result of human curiosity and frankly, wanting to solve a problem that many people have, you can solve and address other issues.
Yeah, and you know, this is also one of those really important things about why the stuff should be published and people should get access to it, because the craziest connections get created from somebody doing completely, on the face of it, unrelated work, will discover something or notice something about a material or whatever it happens to be. And that happens to have, you know, it's just been the magic part, the specific thing that was needed to assist something else. And effectively, all of the disruption conversations we've been having have invariably been somebody invents something for this particular application, and somebody realizes, well, do you know what? That might work fantastically well here, solving a bigger problem, getting rid of a pain point, and Bob's your uncle. That's kind of how the whole thing works.
Colin Callis with Business Unusual, the follicle challenges of men of a certain age primarily, being used and adapted in many mysterious and far more useful ways.